January the 6th.
2010.
Yeah. Continuing in Yechezkel, we're up to Perek Mem Aleph, chapter 41. And Yechezkel is about to enter the Heichal, enter the sanctuary, and give us the dimensions of the sanctuary. Now, in our poster over here, the last thing we discussed was the Ulam, was the entrance hall, directly outside of the main sanctuary. Now, we know that here we have a very similar setup as we do in both the first and second Batei Mikdashos. This third one is similar to the first two in that you have a Kodesh, holy, also known as the Heichal, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. We're going to see as we go through the Psukim that there are several things that are not mentioned explicitly here by Yechezkel, and the Mefarshim are going to assume that some of the things that are left out are the same as they were in the second Beis HaMikdash, and actually in the first Beis HaMikdash as well. We're not dealing here with any of the kelim, any of the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, so that's why you don't see any pictures here of the menorah, or the shulchan, or the mizbeach hazahav, or the aron. Those are all kelim, those are all utensils, which of course will be there, but that's not the discussion of Yechezkel. He's discussing the binyan, the structure. Now, even though there is a picture of the mizbeach hachitza on the outside mizbeach, but the outside mizbeach was physically attached to the ground. It was a stone structure, and therefore it really was similar to a binyan, to a structure. But the other utensils are not here because that's not under discussion. But the actual structure itself was very similar to that of the first two Batei Mikdashos, in that you first have a Kodesh, a separation, although this separation is different than in the first two Batei Mikdashos, as we'll see presently. And then the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rashi, in fact, tells us that remember when we started this whole discussion, it doesn't say anywhere explicitly that this is the third Beis HaMikdash. Yechezkel is describing a Beis HaMikdash. It's not the first Beis HaMikdash because that was destroyed in Yechezkel's time. So it's not the first one, but is it the second one or the third one? So we assume it's the third one because a lot of this doesn't resemble what the second Beis HaMikdash. We know what the second Beis HaMikdash looked like from the Mishnayos that talk about the second Beis HaMikdash. But one of the primary proofs that this is not the second Beis HaMikdash, Rashi tells us, is this separation between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, as we will see, is different than what we know was there in the second Beis HaMikdash. So we'll talk about that when we get to it. Surrounding the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim were a series of Ta'im or Tzala'os, we'll see those words being used, chambers that are all around the structure. That was the same as in the second Beis HaMikdash. There were also Ta'im, there were these structures that were all around the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They were little rooms, they were little. They weren't tiny, but compared to the actual Heichal, which was a very large room. This room here is 20 amos by 40 amos, so it's at least 30 by 60 feet, which is quite a large room. So these rooms were much smaller than that, but they weren't tiny rooms. They were rooms that were used. It's not clear what they were used for. Even in the second Beis HaMikdash, where the Mishnayos go to great lengths to explain what these chambers looked like and how you got to them, even so, it doesn't tell us what they were used for. I don't know if they were storage areas, if they were just areas you could go around the building. It's not clear what they were used for or why they were there.
Is I guess the room combined in the second floor?
There were
stairs.
Yeah. So what we see over here, we're looking down from a bird's eye view, and we see the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They had a very high ceiling. Mm-hmm. So looking from what we're looking at, the ceiling would be jutting out this way, because it's lying on its side. These chambers that go all around, they were actually stacked in stacks of three. So we see here, we'll count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Multiply that by 3 and you get 33. We'll see in the pasuk there were 33 chambers, one on top of the other. In the second Beis HaMikdash, there were 38, not 33. The second Beis HaMikdash also had 5 on either side times 3, on the north and south sides, times 3. So that's 15 on either side, which is 30. But where here in the third Beis HaMikdash, there's 3 on the west side, 1, 2, 3, one on top of the other. In the second Beis HaMikdash, it was 3, 3, and 2. There were 8 in the western side. And here in the third Beis HaMikdash, there are only 3 on the western side. So that's another difference between the two. So what we're looking at then is, we're looking at the sanctuary, the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodashim. Of course, included in that, the dark area is the wall, which is a very thick wall. We'll see how thick the walls were in all directions. You have these ta'im, these tzlos, these chambers, also with thick walls, and also with narrow passageways between them, going from one to the other. Now then you have these two areas on the far extremity of the north and south side, plus another wall. Those are not described in the text at all. They are not in the text in Yechezkel. And they are there, as Rabbi Eisman explains, they are there because the measurements don't add up. We know, as the Chesed is going to tell us, that the measurement of this structure was from east to west, starting, well, here's east and here's west, starting from the west, going all the way to the east, was 100 amos. It was 100 amos. That does not include this wall, which is the wall of the inner courtyard. So the wall of the inner courtyard is not being included. That's the wall of the inner courtyard. We're not counting the wall of the inner courtyard. From the edge of the wall of the inner courtyard all the way to the edge of the western, the outermost western wall was 100 amos. That was 100 amos. And from, and also from the edge of this wall to the edge of this wall was 100 amos. That's fine. However, Dina, did I get that right? We don't count that wall? Are you looking over there?
No, I'm looking, but it
does count the wall?
It says it doesn't.
Oh, it does count the wall, because I made a mistake. Okay, it does count the wall. I'm looking at it again. I know there's an additional, I'm counting it in my head, where the different cubits are, where different amos are. I know there's 11 here at the end, and I'm assuming you didn't count this wall, but I guess it does count that wall. The 11 must start from here. Okay, we're going to go through it. We'll go through each piece individually and show how it adds up to be 100 amos. Okay, so it is 100 amos from the edge of the wall to the edge of the wall, including the wall, not like I said before. 100 amos from north to south as well. But the inner structure here, which obviously is narrower than this most eastern part of it, as you move further in, it's narrower. Here it's only 70 amos, not 100. That's explicit in the text. However, when you break it down, you don't end up with 70 amos. We end up being short by 16 amos. It's going to turn out, and we'll see when we go through it. And therefore, you need to add 8 amos on either side. 8 or 9. I can't remember now if it's 8 or 9 amos on either side. But we'll see. Does it say 8 or 9? What does it say over there? Of course it does. Do I know it? No.
Does anybody know it?
I'm sure people know it. But not me. No, sorry, you're right. It's 18 amos, thank you. It's 18 amos short. It's 18 amos short. When you measure from north to south, when we break it down into parts, it's only going to come out to be 52 amos instead of 70. But we know it's supposed to be 70. The Chesed says it's 70. That means there's 9 amos on either side that's missing. What do you do with those 9 amos? There is a major, major debate. And as Rabbi Eisman points out in his discussion, which is incredible, this is really where Rabbi Eisman shows, this is where he earned his keep in writing this Sefer. I mean, he went through manuscript after manuscript after manuscript and shows that there's really, it's it, there's there's so many different ways of explaining this, and it's not clear at all. And Rashi over here also is very hard to read. And so, where do you get those extra 18 amos, 9 on either side? So, what Rabbi Eisman does, and it's not his own idea, he goes with those who say that in this regard, the third Beis HaMikdash must mimic the second Beis HaMikdash. And in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Mishnayos tell us that further to the north and south of the chambers, again you have the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodashim, the wall of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodashim, the chambers, then the walls of the chambers. Beyond that, you had on one side you had a ramp that was used to go up to the higher parts of the chambers. And on the other side, you also had a ramp, which was used for, what's the right word for this? Water drainage from the roof. So the roof, you'd have the water would drain off on that side, on the south side, and would roll down the ramp to the ground. And then you had another wall beyond the ramps on either side. So that's how you end up with an additional 9 amos on either side, a total of 70 amos from north to south.
Was there a way to shut all of this down in case of danger that he speaks about that could lock this whole thing up?
Well, there are locks in other places, not here. But there are locks all over. I mean, well,
so even in the second temple, was there a way to...
No, the second temple, we know there were locks. The third temple, I'm not sure it's so clear. The second temple, we know the Mishnayos tell us there were locks. And the Mishnayos describe how the Kohanim would come in the morning, where they would unlock it from, where the Levim and the Kohanim would guard all night. We discussed it in the summer when we had that shiur about the second Beis HaMikdash. So the picture that the Eisman admits is only following one possibility in figuring out how you get 70 from north to south. The others disagree and say that there were none, these ramps did not exist. They weren't here. And therefore they have a whole different way of explaining how to get the 70 amos from north to south. Of course, we're going to use the picture that we have, because that's what we have, and that follows at least one explanation of how to learn Rashi, which is certainly a valid explanation. In addition, we're going to learn about how to get into the chambers, these chambers. You see that there's a narrow passageway here that leads into the first chamber. And besides that, we're also going to learn about an empty space both on north and south sides right over here that were beyond the entrance hall. There was an empty space which seems its purpose was to be able to get from the outside into the chambers and onto the ramps. That if you wanted to access the ramps or the outer chambers from outside the complex rather than from inside the complex, you had this empty space here, like an alleyway on the outside of the wall of the entrance hall. So we'll learn about that as well. Another feature, which is not explicit in the text, at least not as explicit as we would want it to be, is this chamber, which is actually to the side of the hall. When you come in to the main sanctuary, coming through the gate over here, so you're on the western side of the inner courtyard, and you enter up these steps through this gate, now you're in the entrance hall. Off to the right and off to the left, off to the north and south, there were these chambers. In the second Beis HaMikdash, there were similar chambers, and those chambers were called the Beis HaChalifos. What is a chalaf? A knife. A chalaf is a knife. A sheichet uses a chalaf, which is a knife. The Beis HaChalifos were the places of the knives. Knives were stored in those rooms off to the side of the entrance hall. We're going to see that those two areas, it's hard to call them rooms because they're so long and narrow, but those two areas are not that explicit in the text. There's one minor reference to them, but not so explicit. But again, we're drawing from what the second Beis HaMikdash looked like and applying that to the third Beis HaMikdash as well. The Mishnah tells us that the reason why the Pasuk says that about the second Beis HaMikdash, that it's called Ariel, as in congregation Ariel. What is an Ariel? A lion. So a lion, picture a lion that is crouching. A lion is crouching. Think of a lion like that. So a lion, when it crouches, is going to be wider in the front and then narrower as you move further back. And the Beis HaMikdash resembles an Ariel, a lion, in that way, that it is wider, meaning from north to south, in the front, which is on the eastern side. And as you go further back, it becomes narrower as you move to the western side. 100 amos here, 70 amos here. So the Beis HaChalifos of the knives, that's what accounts for the additional width on the north and south side towards the front of it, which is the east. That again, as I mentioned, is mimicking the second Beis HaMikdash. So that's not going to be so explicit in the Pesukim. So as we go through over here, this is what we're going to be doing this evening. We're going to try to get through the first 15 Pesukim of Perek Mem Aleph of chapter 41, the first 15 verses. That's our goal for this evening.
Those chambers are all around. So the ones that I guess the next chamber on the western side also, it looks like it's beyond the Kodesh HaKodesh.
Right.
So is that considered part of the Kodesh HaKodesh?
No.
They were able to go around it, even though
it is not part of the Kodesh HaKodesh.
Oh, okay.
It is not part of the Holy of Holies. That's right. So the pasuk says, pasuk aleph, Vayevieni el ha-hechol, he brought me to the sanctuary. Vayamar es ha-elim, and he measured the elim. Now, elim before could have meant columns or could have meant posts. Here it means posts. Shesh amos rochav mipo, 6 amos wide on this side. Vesheish amos rochav mipo, and 6 amos wide on this side. Rochav ha-ohel, the width of the posts of the area. 41. Memalf. So, so the width of the post, what is he talking about? He's talking about the six amma wall right here. This area here is 6 amos wide as you're walking through. So there are posts of 6 amos. Remember, we're starting from the ulam, from the entrance hall. You go 6 amos through this area here, and now you're in the Kodesh, you're in the Heichal, the sanctuary. V'rochav ha-pesach, how wide was the door? How wide was it from right to left, from north to south? Eser amos, it was 10 amos wide. V'chisfos ha-pesach, and the shoulders of the doors, who remembers what the shoulder of the door is?
There were columns,
weren't they? No, not columns.
Like
arches? No, the shoulders means that when you have on either side of the door where the wall continues. Remember we said, for example, let me find the one that's easier to see over here. Here, look at this door over here. If this is the width of the door, this is the shoulder. The part that when you come in, you can go right or left. That's the shoulder. So here as well, when you come in, how wide is the shoulder on both the right and the left? That's the kisvos ha-pesach, the shoulder of the door. It would be easier to describe from here. If this were a doorway, you would walk in, then from this edge to the end of the wall, and from this edge to the end of the wall would be the shoulders of this door. That's where the shoulders are. So, how wide were they? How long were they? The kisvos of the Pesach, the shoulders of the doors. Chamesh amos mipo, v'chamesh amos mipo. 5 amos on this side and 5 amos on that side. Which means total, you go include the shoulders plus the doorway itself. 5, 10, and 5, you have 20. Vayomad arko arboim amo, and he measured the length of the Kodesh, of the Heichal, was 40 amos. Verochav esrim amos, and the width, as we already mentioned, was 20 amos. So the dimensions of this large area, the Kodesh, was 20 amos wide and 40 amos long. And right away he moves into the Kodesh HaKodashim. Uva lifnima, and he came inward, into the inside. Vayamad el ha-pesach, and he measured the post of the door, meaning to get from the Kodesh to the Kodesh HaKodashim. How wide was that door? Shtayim amos, 2 amos. Ve-ha-pesach, 6 amos. And the door was 6 amos. We'll see what that means in a moment. Ve-rochav ha-pesach, 7 amos. And the width of the door was 7 amos. Now here we have a problem. This is a little bit difficult to read. So he's describing now that going from the Kodesh to the Kodesh HaKodashim, this wall here, which separated between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodashim, was 2 amos thick. That's fine. Then he says 2 contradictory statements. He says that the door was 6 amos. Well, what does it mean it was 6 amos? It doesn't mean 6 amos thick. It's only 2 amos thick. So 6 amos in which direction? Well, that's what he's going to say in a minute. But I would have thought he meant wide, 6 amos wide. But that's not, then he says specifically it's not the case. Then he says, and the width of the door was 7 amos. So the width was 7 amos. So what is 6 amos? Now, if you think about it, if the width is 7 amos, then how wide were the shoulders here? Well, this was 20 minus 7 is 13. So what does that leave for the two shoulders? The two shoulders must have been 6.5 and 6.5. So it's 6.5, 7 and 6.5. That's a total of 20. So then what was 6? The shoulders were each 6.5. The width of the door was 7. The depth of the door was only 2. So what was 6? So Rashi tells us there's no way to explain this pasuk except to say that when it says the door was 6, it means the height was 6 amos, which is not that big of a door, not that tall of a door, compared to, I mean, for us, that's a pretty big door. 6 amos is at least a 9-foot door. That's a pretty tall door. That would be taller than a standard door. A 9-foot door is taller than a standard door. But for the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash, that's not such a tall door. So it would only be 6 amos high. That's what we would be saying over here. Now we should just note that even though the Mefarshim don't say this, remember that one of the constant nisim, one of the constant miracles that took place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies, at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash and the first Beis HaMikdash, was, or actually of the Mishkan and the first Beis HaMikdash. Okay, but that wasn't constant. You're right. But constant was, okay, that the space didn't, right, that the Aron, the Ark, didn't fit, but it did fit. The measurements didn't work out, which means that let's take the Mishkan, that's the one we're most familiar with. It's in Parshas Truma, Tetzaveh. We have it right in front of us. It's coming up in the Parshios. So in Parshas Truma, we're told that the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, in the Mishkan, I'm talking about now, not the Beis HaMikdash, was 10 amos by 10 amos. 10 amos in each direction. The Aron was 2.5 amos wide. Long. 2.5 amos long. So if it was 2.5 amos long and it was put right in the middle of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or if it was 2.5 amos long, then what does that leave in two directions? It leaves 7.5 amos that didn't have, 10 minus 2.5 is 7.5, that didn't have the Aron. If you split that in half, you end up with 3.75 in each direction. So if it's going to measure up, it should be 3.75 on one side, 3.75 on the other side, and 2.5 of the Aron itself. That equals 10. And that's perfect. That will be perfect. The only thing is, the Gemara tells us that if you measured from one side of the Aron to the wall, it would measure 5 amos. If you measure the Aron, it measured 2.5 amos. And if you measure from the other side of the Aron to the wall, it was 5 amos, which seems to measure 12.5 amos. But if you would measure from wall to wall, you would only get 10 amos. Somehow, the Aron didn't take up space. It didn't follow the law of matter. It didn't take up space, somehow. Obviously, it defies our understanding because it was a mace. It doesn't make sense. It physically doesn't make sense.
Witnesses to this.
Yeah.
They saw this with their own eyes.
Yes.
No, but they haven't gone into it.
When they built it, they saw it, and and Aaron HaKohen could testify to it, and the Torah tells us that's the case. So the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, this defies space. So it's not contradictory when we have measurements that don't add up in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, I'm not saying that that's what's going on over here, because here we're talking about the entranceway to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And Rashi does not say what I'm saying. Rashi says, we're forced to say that when it says six amos, we're talking about the height of the door. I wouldn't be surprised if there would be someone who would argue that no, that it just doesn't add up. It doesn't measure up. That's the way it works in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You can't ask questions about how the measurements don't work out in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's the way it is. So I'm not saying that's definitely the explanation over here. I'm just pointing out that it shouldn't bother us. The more we get to the inner sanctuaries and the more holy areas we get to, it shouldn't bother us if the physical laws of nature don't seem to add up. Because the physical laws of nature were not in play once you moved into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, it's not, the Mishnah doesn't say that the Kodesh HaKadoshim didn't add up. It says that the Aron, the actual Ark, didn't take up space. It doesn't say that the Kodesh HaKadoshim didn't measure properly. It did measure properly. But it was the Aron then, when you put it down in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, just didn't take up space. So it doesn't, it's not saying that they were convoluted measurements. Be that as it may, Rashi says the six means the height. Yes?
It's just a comment that, and you know, because we're used to it, we're used to the fact that sperm and egg create a human being, we're used to it, you know, of course. You know, but that's miraculous too.
Right, correct.
We're used to that a flower, correct. A flower blossoms into, or a tree, we're used to it, you know. This is, of course it's normal.
Right.
So why would that be any different?
Yeah, okay. Then you're right. You're right. Misha Amar Lashemen V'yalek Yomar L'chometz V'yalek. The one who says the oil can burn, can say that vinegar can burn too. And they're all, right? And that's true. And the more that we consider everything to be a miracle, the more likely we are to have quote-unquote miracles happen, because everything's a miracle. You're right. But nevertheless, there is a law of nature that Hashem generally governs the world by, which was not in play when you got into the Beis HaMikdash.
Wouldn't it be the closer you come to Hashem, especially in this particular area, it's going to defy man's reason some ways. It's going to be beyond him, right?
Yes.
It goes along the characteristics of Hashem. It's going to defy space. And the more, it seems to me in my mind, the more we'll find out about that, the more the whole thing becomes beyond us. No?
That's very likely. But bear in mind that Yechezkel here is bearing witness to what it's supposed to look like, ostensibly, so that we can build it.
Right.
Right.
Man's view, putting it into physical space.
Okay.
Well, see, I was taught that it doesn't defy space, that space really doesn't exist. Hashem just created it for us, because we have trouble, but since it's the Aron, and it's so spiritual, and it's God's,
it doesn't need space.
Right.
It exists, but it does not need to take up any space.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. Remember, when they carried the Aron in the Midbar, it carried the Kohanim, or the Levina carried it, and they lifted it up, it carried them. They didn't have to put the weight on the shoulder.
Right, that's correct.
It didn't have weight or space.
I was going to say, is that a door then or a wall?
Okay, so it's an open area to get in. I don't know if there were actually doors there or not. It would make sense that there would be doors, because otherwise you can see right into the Kodesh HaKadoshim all the time.
Wasn't a curtain?
So here's where Rashi says that there's clearly a difference between this Beis HaMikdash that's being described and the second and the first Batei Mikdashos. The second Beis HaMikdash had two curtains. It had two curtains. And the two curtains, the Kohen Gadol would enter to get into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The two curtains were. Thank you. Let's see if we can. It's very hard to see it over here. It's very, very small, hard to see. But the two curtains, the one was closer to the. Here we're going up, is going from east to west. So one is further east and one is further west. The one that was further east was connected on the northern side and extended from the northern side until almost the southern wall, but then stopped before the southern wall, so there was a space between the edge of the curtain and the southern wall. The innermost curtain, the curtain further west, was connected on the southern side and extended towards the north and ended an amma before the northern side. So basically, the Kohen Gadol would walk in from the south, walk between the curtains, and then make a left when he got to the north side, and then he was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So you couldn't walk straight through from the Kodesh to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You needed to go this convoluted way through the curtains to get into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's the way it worked in the second Beis HaMikdash.
Why do you think
my understanding is it was that way, first of all, so that it would not be something you could see right into. It would block anybody's vision, even when there was no door to open and see inside. And second of all, also to underscore the point that you were going from the mundane to the holy, and you don't just go right through. You know, it's a mahalach. You have to work your way to get there.
But this one is different, right?
So this one is different. That's what Rashi says. So this was clearly different. This was clearly different. Right. Now, if we look at the next pasuk, there's an interesting point in the next one, Dal, in pasuk Dal, verse 4. Vayamar esar ko esrim amma. He measured the length of the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 amos. Ferochav esrim amma, its width was also 20 amos. So it was 20 by 20. El pnei ha-hechol, towards the sanctuary. Vayomer Eli, and he said to me, Ze Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now this, who said to me?
The Malach,
the angel. Now this angel has been the strong silent type for a while. Right? I mean, he told them in the very beginning, pay attention. Right? But since then, he's been walking around and measuring things, and that's it. He hasn't said a word. But here, all of a sudden, the angel says to Yechezkel, this is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now Yechezkel was no dunce. I mean, he knew this was. We would know it was the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It resembles the second Beis HaMikdash. It resembles the first Beis HaMikdash. Yechezkel was there in the second Beis HaMikdash. He was a Kohen. He knew what the second. The first Beis HaMikdash. He knew what the first Beis HaMikdash looked like firsthand. He didn't need it from pictures or from Pesukim. He was there. So he certainly understood that this was the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So why is the angel telling him, Ze Kodesh HaKadoshim, this is the Holy of Holies? It's a little bit strange that there should be a pronouncement, this is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So I will tell you a simple answer that I saw in the Malbim, and then I'll tell you a suggestion, which I didn't see anywhere, but it has to do with what the Kollel is learning in the morning, and I think it has a similarity. The Malbim writes that the reason why the Malach had to make this pronouncement is because in the second Beis HaMikdash, where you had the two curtains, and between the two curtains there was a width of an amma, it was one cubit between the two curtains, it was debatable whether that amma had the status of the Kodesh or the status of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Where did it fit in? Because there was a curtain between it and the Kodesh, and there was also a curtain between it and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So where does it fit in? Does it have the sanctity of the Kodesh or of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? That was debated and unresolved. So for the third Beis HaMikdash, the Malach is pronouncing, this is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, meaning these 20 Amos by 20 Amos is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The doorway is not part of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The 2 Amma wide doorway is not part of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's what the Malach is coming to say. Only the 20 by 20 expanse of the area of the room itself. That's what the Malbim says as the explanation.
Why does that feel
like that? What's that?
Why would that be if it encloses that room? Why did he not count the door as part of that?
I don't know the answer. It just be where. I mean, you got to draw the line somewhere. If he would count the door, we'd ask why is he counting the door? Either way you go over here, you can ask why. So I don't know the answer, but he would be. That's the way the Malbim understands his pronouncement.
All right, I might be morbid here, but like during the Second Temple when they had like a new Kohen Gadol every year almost after Yom Kippur. So if the guy made it through the curtains, okay, before he was Mifter, and they had the rope, were they pulling him under the two curtains? I mean, or were they pulling him zigzag? And if they were pulling him zigzag, then they had to be in the Kodesh HaKodoshim if that was considered Kodesh HaKodoshim.
Right.
You know, or did the person, if the person was nifter between the curtains, then they knew that that was the Kodesh HaKodoshim.
Yeah, I don't know the answer.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I don't know the answer to the question. It doesn't say that the Kohen Gadol would die. Even though you're right about the, you know, the string and then all that they had that string. There's a discussion about what the string was doing, but the Gemara that says that after the time of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, that it was common for the Kohen Gadol to be replaced each year, the Gemara doesn't say he would die on Yom Kippur. The Gemara says he wouldn't live out the year. That each year. He wouldn't live out the year, and it was assumed because he wasn't worthy of being the Kohen Gadol. But it doesn't say he would die then on Yom Kippur.
Okay.
So I'm not saying it never happened, but the Gemara doesn't say that was an annual occurrence, that they would die on Yom Kippur. It was that by the end of the year, they needed a new one.
People still wanted the job.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. They still want it's an incredible thing. They still wanted the job. You would think, you know, who would, right? But
after the pressure of it, it's like, oh, I don't know what you want. Did I do it right?
So are we saying, from again, I want to remember, that this angel brought him to the Holy of Holies?
Well, to what? This? It's a vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in the Holy of Holies.
Yeah.
And he had never been, because he was...
No, I assume he was not in the Kodesh HaKodesh. I don't think he was the Kohen Gadol,
right.
So he would never actually been inside the Kodesh HaKodesh. But this is not, this doesn't exist yet.
No, but...
Right.
In this vision.
Yeah.
He's in there.
Yeah, but he is a Kohen.
He's privy.
He is a Kohen, and he's obviously a very special Kohen. He's a Navi, and we have all of this from him. So he's cool, you know, perhaps he would have been worthy of being the Kohen Gadol. You know, that we don't know.
Do we know how long the longest Kohen Gadol?
Well, the Gemara says that Shimon HaTzadik was a Kohen Gadol for 40 years, and Yochanan Kohen Gadol was a Kohen Gadol for 80 years.
80 years?
Yeah. Wow. But that's the second Beis HaMikdash. In the first Beis HaMikdash, it's not, we don't know for sure. Eli was the Kohen Gadol for, I mean, he died at age 98. So, I don't know, but there was no Beis HaMikdash yet in his day.
What I always felt why did they tie that string? It bothers me, was it dishonorable in the sense that it's also the position that they held. This is around his foot, around his neck, around his arm. Is it safe?
Waist,
around his ankle. Around his waist?
I think the foot.
I think it was the ankle,
wasn't it? Yeah, I think so. I think it's obscure. It's not such a clear thing. It's not like it's, you know, it's not like it's all over the place.
But the angel, when he has to say it, is it like a shavua that you have to verbalize it? So if he was saying Hashem promises that there will be a...
Okay, good. So here's that dovetails with what I want to tell you about what we're learning in the morning. See, in the morning, the Kohel is learning right now the halachos of writing a Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah, meaning actually writing the letters and what the letters look like and what happens if you find in you're reading the Sefer Torah on a Shabbos and you find that there's a crack in the letter or two letters are connected. What happens then? Do you have to take out another Sefer Torah? Do you not take out, all those halachos. Now, included in those halachos is a discussion about the sofer when the scribe writes the Sefer Torah or the Tefillin or the Mezuzah. So the sofer has to first make a pronouncement at the beginning, before he starts writing, that this that I'm writing this Sefer Torah for the sake of being a Sefer Torah. It's L'shem Sefer Torah. That's what I'm doing. It's to say what he's doing before he starts. And then he starts to write. Now, when he writes, so he's not writing it from scratch. We have existing Sefer Torah, and he's writing a Sefer Torah from an existing Sefer Torah. Or he's writing a tefillin, a pair of tefillin or a mezuzah, from an existing tefillin or mezuzah. So how is he writing? So there's three possibilities. Either he's copying it, let's say he's writing a mezuzah. So he's got one mezuzah here open in front of him, and he's copying from one to the other. That's one possibility. Another possibility is...
They fill in the letters.
Yeah, but who wrote it in the first place? Mm-hmm. Right? The other possibility is that someone is reading to him. Mm-hmm. Let's say I'm writing, and my friend is reading to me, Shema, spelled Shin, Mem, Ayin. I write down Shin, Mem, Ayin. Yisrael, Yud, Sin, Resh, Aleph, Lamed. I write that down. Right? Hashem, Elokeinu, Hashem, Echad. He's telling me what to write as I write. And the third possibility is that the sofer, who's done it many, many times, knows it by heart, and he just says, and he just writes from memory. Now, there is a discussion in a situation where the sofer is copying it from another source, or when someone is reading it to him, does the sofer need to save the words also? Meaning like this, if the sofer is writing it by heart, everybody agrees, he can't just write it by heart. He has to say it as he's writing it. Shema. He writes down Shema.
Are there witnesses with him?
No. He has to say it. Shema. Yisrael. Hashem. Elokeinu. He has to, as he's writing, he says the words. But what if someone else is reading it to him? So you say Shema. Do I need to repeat Shema before I write it down? So there's a discussion whether one needs to do that or not. The Gemara tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Sefer Torah, that's the way it was done. Hashem said to him, Bereshis. Moshe said, Bereshis, and wrote down Bereshis. Then Hashem said, Bara. Moshe said, Bara, and wrote down the word Bara. And then Hashem said, Elohim, and same thing. So Moshe repeated what Hashem said before he wrote it down.
What about when he wrote the Sefer Torah to Shvatim?
We don't know. The Gemara only tells us that case. Mm-hmm. So there's a discussion whether that needs to be done, mimicked, when you write today. Mm-hmm. When you write a Sefer Torah or Tefillin or Mezuzah, does that need to be repeated? So there are different opinions. There's one opinion that says that it is appropriate for the sofer to repeat the words, even though he knows it very well, and even though you don't really have to. Why? Why would he need to repeat it? So this is a fascinating thing.
For Kedusha.
For
Kedusha.
Well, no, you're saying in order to have his mind on what he's doing. Okay. There's something more than that. I saw this morning, that when the scribe says the word, the hevel piv, the breath of his mouth, the breath of the word that he says Shema, that breath that comes out of his mouth, that utters the word Shema, gives sanctity to the ink that he now puts down on the parchment and writes the word Shema. It's an incredible concept. I don't begin to understand what that means. But apparently, the verbalization, if that's a word, is that a word? Mm-hmm. Verbalizing the word that he's about to write down in ink, it projects sanctity onto what he's writing. It doesn't mean he has to breathe on it. But it means by saying it and then writing it, it gives a certain sanctity to the writing of the letters itself. It's an incredible concept.
And it's a kosher protocol because Hashem also created the Olam Hazeh.
Okay. Hashem did it through speech. Right.
So you emulate Hashem.
Okay, very good. Very good. Hashem didn't have to speak.
How careful we have to be when we speak.
How careful we have to be when we speak. Right? Right, there we go.
People have to be there so you imitate the same tradition.
Right? Right, okay. Very good. You can take this, you know, in many ways.
Beautiful.
So I wonder if when we get to the Kodesh HaKodashim over here, here the Malach has to pronounce, this is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. More than anywhere else, where obviously it was all holy, but the Kodesh HaKadoshim is the most sanctified of all of anywhere on earth. So over there, the Malach pronounces it, which that pronouncement gives it a greater level of sanctity.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's the same Kiddush Nehavdallah. We sanctify the holy from the rest of the week. Again,
with speech.
Pronounced with speech.
Right, with speech. Right. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's possible that that's what's going on over here. It would be very interesting if that's an explanation. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Now we get back to the nitty-gritty here of going through each of the pieces of the Kodesh HaKodashim and the Kodesh and showing how they all measure. Vayomad Kir Habayis, he measured the wall of the sanctuary. Shesh Amos, it was 6 Amos. Verochav Hatzelah 4 Amos, and the width of the chamber was 4 Amos. Saviv Saviv Labayis Saviv, around around from the house all around. So, he's measuring now the wall, we'll take it the western wall, which is 6 Amos wide, and then 4 Amos wide would be the chamber itself, for a total of 10. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Now, there was no mention yet of these chambers. Now he's going to explain it. Vahatzelaos, these chambers, Sela el Sela, one chamber to another chamber, Shalosh Ushloshim Pa'amim, 33 times. There were 33 chambers, as we described already. 5 on the north, 5 on the south, 1 on the west, which is 11, times 3, because there were 3 levels. Uvaos Bakir Asher Labayis, Latzlaos, Saviv Saviv, and they came into the wall to the of the bayis, of the sanctuary, for the chambers around around, lios achuzim, to be attached, v'lo yu achuzim b'kir abayis, but they should not be attached to the wall of the house. This is a very ambiguous pasuk. What does that mean? So here again, the Mefarshim draw from the Mishnayos to talk about the second Beis HaMikdash. There was a concern that the when you have these three, these chambers again, there's 3 floors. So you need to have 3 levels of floor and ceiling, okay, connected in, thank you, we'll show it, connected into the wall. So if I'm, here you have, this is a bottom floor, there's a top floor above here. So here we have our ceiling, which is the floor of the floor above us. Well, this ceiling has to be connected into the wall. Well, when you connect it into the wall with floorboards and planks, you have to make a hole in the wall and stick it into the wall. There was a concern not to put a hole in the wall of the sanctuary, which would weaken the wall of the sanctuary. So instead, the one, I'll show you the picture which Dina just gave me here, the wall of the sanctuary was staggered. The bottom of the sanctuary, the wall was wider, and as you went higher up, it got narrower and narrower. It was stepped. Meaning like this. On the side of the sanctuary, the side of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim, it was smooth. It was a straight wall, as you would expect. Straight up, like our walls. But on the other side, the bottom floor, the wall was thicker. Then it jutted in a little bit and went higher up. Jutted in a little bit, went higher up. So that the board would lie on that step. And if you can see this picture, if you can see the picture over here, here's the wall. Here's this. The sanctuary would be towards my left. That's where the sanctuary would be. And this is the smooth wall of the sanctuary. But here you have the bottom floor chamber, which was 4 amos wide, like the pasuk describes. The next one was now 5 amos wide because the wall was stepped. It moved in a little bit, and this plank laid over there on that step. And then the third chamber, higher up, was 6 amos wide because, again, it jutted in another amma. So 6 amos wide. And then again up here in order to put the top of the roof. So the wall of the sanctuary got narrower as you got higher up so that you could lay the floorboard and ceiling board on that step. That's what's being described here in this pasuk. Thank you. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. V'rochava v'nosva l'mala l'mala latzlaos. And it became wider and going around above for the chambers. Again, very difficult to know what this is talking about. Kimusav habayis l'mala l'mala, for the house, the sanctuary was surrounded above. Saviv saviv labayis, around the sanctuary. Al kain rochav labayis l'mala, therefore there was width to the sanctuary above. V'chena tachtona ya'ale al ha'elyona latichona. And also from the bottom one, you would go to the top one through the middle one. I hope that made a lot of sense. So the idea here is that it describing how the chambers got wider as you went higher. The chambers got wider as you went higher, as we already saw, and that's what it means. It got wider as you went higher up. Each time, getting higher and higher as you go, it got wider. Now, this pasuk that, you know, let's use Rabbi Eisenman's translation of the pasuk, just because it is so difficult to translate the words carefully.
So it's a spiral staircase, Rabbi. Is that
okay.
What you're understanding?
Okay. So hold on. So the way the pasuk reads according to Rabbi Eisenman is, and the winding passage went upwards to the cells, for the encompassing of the house ascended upward all around the house. So the house's width was above. So two, the lowest ascended to the highest, one by the way of the middle one. Okay. That helped. So the as Rabbi Eisenman himself points out, it is tempting here to understand that this winding way of getting up would be referring to this ramp that, as I mentioned, is not in the psukim. That this is what it's talking about. This ramp was how you got it, when it ascended higher and higher, and that's how you got into the higher areas. And in fact, there is one of the Mefarshim learns that way. But Rashi does not say that. Rashi tells us that within each chamber, how did you get to the chamber above? Remember, they were stacked one on top of the other. So there was, as you mentioned, a spiral staircase inside the chamber that you could go to the one above it and then to the one above it. So if you were in the lowest floor, there was a chamber that you could go, there was a staircase, a spiral staircase, to get to the next one and then up to the next one.
If you get to the roof, you'd need the ramp.
Right, the ramp would get you up the roof. I don't believe that the staircase went up. I mean, the picture doesn't have it that way. I assume there was no need for that. Right.
Does he think there was a floor below
this one? It does not seem that there was a basement. There was a foundation, as we're going to see, that the foundation of the outer wall was actually wider than the wall itself, but there was no basement.
Under the second temple, wasn't that where they had all the baths and the...
Not under the sanctuary. It was under the courtyard.
Which part of that would that be? So the very front part?
It's different in the third base Hamikdash. It doesn't look the same.
Where was the iron hidden again? That was in the court.
That was in one of the Lashachos. That was one of the chambers. The outer chambers.
The courtyard before you even entered the building itself, where the women and the men.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It was looking on the outer side of the second.
Yeah.
If the ramp was to the chambers, wouldn't there have to be entranceway?
Yeah,
to the
on the side.
Like through the wall?
Yeah, it would be like a fire escape type of thing. I don't know.
It
would
have to.
It doesn't show it.
It doesn't know that that's the right
thing. It doesn't show it. Again, he's not clear. He doesn't know. He doesn't know for sure how it worked. So.
I have a question. Like when we were allocating what to put in what chamber, then, I mean, there's some chambers you have to go through many to get to them, so you can't go through those things quickly.
Right.
Was it stored like, these are the things we only need once a year, these are the things we need like...
Right, you mean the folding chairs and the... So I don't know. I don't know what they did.
If you weren't the Kohen Gadol, could you go in and get something through the outside way?
Yeah. Yeah, you could.
So any Kohen, that's the reason for the outside way that any Kohen...
I imagine that's the case. But even in the second base analysis, we don't know what was stored in those things.
So why do we have two entrances from inside... the Kodesh. You have the skinny way, and then you have a bigger doorway.
She's referring to this. She's referring to this narrow way here,
yeah.
And then this way here.
Right.
Right. So here this is mimicking the second Beis Hamikdash. It's not explicit over here in the Pesukim, but in the second Beis Hamikdash, that bringing up what I think you mentioned this about the how it was locked up. At night, in the second Beis Hamikdash, it was all locked up. The way that you got in was you went in through the side over here into this chamber. Then you came in from the chamber to the sanctuary. And then you unlocked the doors from the inside. Now, in the second Beis Hamikdash, it was a little different than that, but that's essentially the same idea over here. That's why he drew it this way, because of the same concept of being able to get in. And then we're going to see that there are several doors to this first chamber, and that's where he's getting it from.
Why can you open the door from the outside?
In the second place, I believe it was a safety feature. I believe it was a safety feature.
How did you get into that narrow thing to begin with?
It was a very complicated lock system.
But it couldn't have been the complicated on the main code. Door and just call it a day?
Right.
It wasn't
6213, though. No, it wasn't. Now that's recorded. See that?
There's probably a lot of discussion about that. How should we do this?
I mean, there's got to be a point to opening from the inside out as opposed from the outside in.
Yeah. Could be. I don't know.
Could the light show from the inside out, so they want to see from the inside out?
Could be. Pasuk says, yes.
Do we know why we didn't have the Kerach, the two of them, the curtains separate by the, in the Kodesh Kodesh, because you said the Kohen can't, you can look right straight through. Is it because, is it going to be again Aaron with the Kerubim, where you're going to have a different relationship with Kodesh Baruch, will the Kerubim always be embracing itself?
I'm assuming that there'll be a different relationship between us and the Kodesh Baruch, but I don't know, but you know, there's no way for me to know about the Kerubim.
You're saying it's possible you can
see
straight through, but there might still be something close.
I don't know, there may be doors. Yeah, I don't know.
Did we have, back then, a locking system like we know now, the sophisticated kind of...
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have the, you know, the magnetic key entry.
No, I
didn't.
Know,
the key card.
Did they have
locksmiths
then?
Yeah. Mishnah has already described different parts of a key.
Intricate.
It could be wood or metal. I mean, it was easier for them to use wood than metal. But it describes the intricate workings of a lock. And key. In the Mishnah, they talk about Tuma and Tara, it describes a key and how it works.
Is this a vision in his head, or is he putting it down in front of his head? How is it being transcribed that he's hearing it from the angel?
He's seeing it. He sees the vision. He's there. He sees himself there.
And he's not writing the number.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Angel told him, "Make sure you pay good. You pay attention over here."
How do you remember? I mean,
detail
and oh my
gosh.
No,
he's
Yechezkel.
He attempted to put it down on whatever the parchment was or whatever.
He put it down.
But he didn't do any drawing.
But I made the drawing.
No, it doesn't say that he drew anything.
But he never attempted.
It does not seem that he drew anything. No.
Did he write it down as it was happening, or he went back and?
It seems that it was
asleep when he was.
Right. It seems it was written afterwards. That's what it seems.
Definitely Ruach HaKodesh to remember.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then he's an Avi, you know. Yeah.
Well, there are people that have photographic memory. I mean, you know, I'm sure he has gold.
Some people can look at a book on a thousand pages and know that they're awake.
Even more. Well, a Nebu is a higher form of being awake, right?
Yeah, a Nebu is more.
Is there a time span on this that he is?
We don't know. All right, we're out of town. Okay, hold on. Let's just see. All right, I guess we'll start from Ches next time. Okay, so what we have not done is we have not broken down the 100 amos by 70 amos into specific units. So we'll have to start. Boy, I said we're going to get through the first 15, so we did 7.
I got halfway there. Okay. A lot of questions.